Welcome, Jets fans, to another edition of the Jetstream Review. It's me, David. I'm taking over the hosting duties again. And I've got with me this week, Anthony. Welcome back to the podcast, mate. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a while. I've been on hiatus, but no, I'm back now.
Good to hear. Well, we figure that you've been off on probably a scouting mission or a referees conference or something like that, mate. Any truth to those rumours?
Oh, plenty of things. I was actually up in Brisbane for our game against Aurora a few weeks ago, and then I've had some family visits, and yeah, may have been doing some sneaky inside looks at the Mariners, but no.
Very good. Well, I'm not going to forget it this week. I was chastised enough by Mr. Bodie, but the opening question this week, mate, which Premier League team would you like to see return? So we've had a number of teams leave or will be relegated and we never see them again. So which one for you?
For me, it's got to be Bolton. I've got some, as a Chelsea fan, I've got some good memories from when we first won the Premier League and sealing the title at the Reebok Stadium, as it was known then. Yeah. But yeah, like I don't know. Bolton for me was sort of like, I guess a bit like what Wellington are in the A-League. Like, I just couldn't hate them. So, yeah, you know, seeing, enough, you never like to see a club drop that far down. So, you know, it was definitely Bolton for me, but a special mention, I would also not mind seeing Wolves back. And I know Glenn will be happy to hear that. So,
jeez. I mean, I thought you were going to say a small team like Blackburn. But no, look, for me, it's actually Nottingham Forest. I don't know, no particular reason other than maybe the links with Cloughy and the fact that, I mean, Aston Villa are also European champions, but, you know, they went through and they were European champions back in their day, and it's been a long time between drinks for them. They're probably the team that I'd like to see make a return. And they've been on the brink a few times over the last couple of years, but just not managed to get over it. So, yeah, that's it for me. Anyone wants to hit us up with their thoughts on who they'd like to see? Leeds are not an accepted answer, by the way. You can hit us up at the Jetstream Yuli or via our respective Twitter handles.
I would actually really love to see people's answers for this because, like, obviously, like, a lot of people have a lot of different thoughts. But if anyone says Leeds, you'll be blocked straight away on Twitter. So don't do that.
Oh, mate. All right. Well, we better get into it. We're going to have to discuss the disappointing loss, the 2-0 loss from the Newcastle Jets against Western Sydney Wanderers on Sunday.
Sliding it through. Lucky Scott on the turn. And his first A-League goal is dispatched right into the top corner. What a weight off his shoulders. The Wanderers teenager, Tony Popovich, kept faith with him.
It's time to roll the ball right into the heart of the Newcastle defence. A lack of alignment from Burgard and Lockie Jackson, and it's a fabulous, fabulous finish.
Calburn leaves it in the end for Marley Leia. Just got through to Hoffman. And credit to him for keeping his feet after that challenge from Clisby. It's worked out nicely here. Nichols, across the face. Great keeping, Jack Duncan. Still got to be on guard here. Soterio, and a deflection. Helps the Wanderers go 2-0 up. Jack Duncan did well initially, but it looks like he was no hope second time around. And with a quarter of the game to go, the Wanderers are well on their way.
Thanks very much to Fox Sports for allowing us to use their, well, for I guess we'll give credit to Fox Sports for the highlights there, Anthony. Mate, it was a disappointing result given the way the Jets have performed over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was a bit of a throwback to the weeks when everyone was out injured and we were sort of putting whoever wanted to play in the position on the park. So it was really disappointing to see us go back to that sort of that level of I guess incompetence really in every area across the park. So, you know, just disappointing all around.
Yeah, I mean, we really struggled to get any passes to stick, create any sort of pressure on our own. We had glimpses throughout the match that I'm sure we're going to touch on, but I don't know, mate, when I spoke with Brogan in the pre-match or in the preview for this match as part of the opposition fan chat. He said, you know, it depends on what Jets show up. And I was sort of scoffing to myself a bit, thinking, oh, look, the Jets have been pretty consistent over the last couple of weeks. They've been not quite scoring goals for fun, but they've certainly had no trouble finding the back of the net. But it honestly, to me, looked like we couldn't hit water off the side of a boat.
Yes, yeah, mate. Definitely. Did we end up having any shots on target? Like,
we had one. Andrew
DeBoer. Yeah, wow. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I just... there you go. I was struggling to remember one. So. But yeah, we just... I think Brogan was right. Like, you know, it does depend on the Jets, which Jets side turns up. And, you know, I think you would have been wholly right in scoffing and saying, you know, well, yeah, we have been sort of consistent. And, you know, I sort of thought that with us missing Hull, we wouldn't have too much of a drama with, you know, just Marley Lay slotting in for him or, you know, or whoever really. But, you know, obviously that is something that we were missing, maybe. You know, I hate to admit it, but maybe we were lacking some Hull out wide or... You know, some could say it was Wayne Brown's creativity in midfield or whatever, you know, but it's just, it's really hard to look at that and take positives out of it.
Let's talk about the starting lineup. I mean, we were quite limited in our options. Wayne Brown, Morten Nordstrand out for their respective injuries, and Andrew Hull was missing through suspension. And he brought, Mark Jones managed to bring Coco and Devante Clute into the starting lineup. And he also brought in... Oh, geez, the name escapes me. Who did he bring in for... no, Brown was missing the week before. My apologies there. Are they the... Coco, Clute? I mean, on paper, prior to the game, it's the changes that most people would have been looking for. Are they the changes that you would have made for this game?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing why I'm a little... that's why I'm so... I guess struggling to comprehend exactly why we played so poorly. Like what we lacked in the starting 11 compared to what we would have on an average week, we replaced with players that effectively would just come off the bench for those guys anyway. You know, like it's difficult to see like why that threw out the dynamic a whole heap. I mean, you can argue that Coco and Nordstrand are two different types of strikers and, you know, you've got to play tactically, you've got to play with them differently and that sort of thing. But, you know, realistically, like even taking that out, it wasn't just that. Like it was in midfield, we were struggling to get it forward, like towards those guys. So, you know, you can't even really pull that argument. It's just, yeah, I mean,
we look at the I guess the minutes that players have had in recent weeks, and Coco played 75 minutes in this game, and in the 7 appearances he'd had before this game, he'd only managed to play more than 40 minutes once. I mean, Bodes has been quite vocal about Marley Lay, thinking he's only got sort of 60 minutes worth of legs. He's struggling for fitness. And I think it was pretty hot down there in Western Sydney yesterday afternoon in the sun. And Devante Clute, I mean, he does have the length or the legs in him. But, yeah, I don't know. Are we missing the energy of Brown? Is it just simply we took too many... Well, we're missing... three of the four key attacking options that we've had over the last couple of weeks where we've had some success, and that just threw our attacking jive off.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it did, but you look back to the Brisbane game when Brown had to head off at halftime, and, you know, we ended up playing Marley Lay centrally, and all of a sudden that was what unlocked Brisbane. I think that's what Jonesy tried to do with the sub of bringing Dan Mullen on and pushing Hoffey forward, like to put Marley Lay centrally, but it just didn't work as well. You know, I think definitely though, like we definitely showed that we missed those guys that were out though, you know, for what they offer. Like Andrew Hull does cop a lot of flack, and look, most of it's probably from me. But to be fair to him, like he's been quite solid in the last few weeks. And I think we definitely did miss that out wide. Like, you know, Marley Lay was really sort of kept quiet for big portions of the game by Scott Neville, and then when he swapped sides, you know, by Jack Clisby as well. So, yeah, like it's disappointing.
You spoke. Let's go back to what you're speaking about before. The midfielders, Jugarkovic and Poliak, they've certainly been identified by us and probably by most fans as our ideal central midfield partnership. And though Poliak had a good game against Perth Glory, I thought both of them were struggled to show any sort of dominance in that in against the Western Sydney. And we commented following the Perth match that we really gave a lot of room to Diego Castro last week, and I felt pretty much from the offset, Nico Martinez, Mitch Nichols, Josh Sotirio even, there was a lot of space between the lines for these players to exploit. And the defence in particular, were they sitting too deep? Because they certainly backed off Martinez as he continued to run at them. Or were we just simply lacking from the midfield pressure from the midfielders in that regards? I mean, it was almost like they were bypassed.
Yeah, that was one thing I noticed in the first... I think it was in the first 4 minutes, Nico Martinez had created three chances or something like that, like for the Wanderers, and every single one was because he'd managed to get in the space between the lines and just cause trouble. And I do remember definitely like what you were saying about how the defence were just sort of standing off him. You cannot stand off that guy. Like, he's ridiculous. Like, you can watch him play all day, but... unfortunately, our defence, they're not getting paid. Yeah, like our defence not getting paid to watch him all day, unfortunately. So, you know, like they need to step in and do something at some point. But just on that, like the space between the lines, like one team that this year has really worked that well, Sydney, whenever they've got a lead, you notice the space between their midfield and their defence just is non-existent. Like their defenders are nearly tripping over their defensive midfielders because their midfield is that deep. And, like, not necessarily saying that we should be doing that and parking the bus from the get-go, but, you know, surely there's got to be some sort of medium between that and what we had to try and, you know, nullify guys like Diego Castro, Nico Martinez, you know, those sorts of guys that are really good creative influences on the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Jets really did, like they have the last couple of weeks, actually, I'd probably say, they were really slow to start. Are you picking anything as to the reason why we're really struggling to get any sort of foothold on the match, assert any sort of early dominance? Because we're copying a lot of pressure. We're allowing shots and we're allowing ourselves to almost have our opposition build confidence at our own at the expense of our start, which I think is just ridiculous. Opposition teams have really worked out that they need to just press the Jets at any sort of forward pressure, and we really struggle to play it out.
Yeah, definitely. To be fair, I don't know what we can change to do, like to alter that. You know, I mean, I only speak from something that one of my coaches tried when I was, you know, playing juniors and stuff, that like whenever we went through a period where we had a really crap defense and we were conceding a lot of goals. So what our coach did was he changed our warm up, and in our warm up, instead of just, you know, doing shooting drills and stuff, we would end up like playing, you know, 4-on-4 sort of drills in squares pretty much right up until kickoff. Like, so, you know, like, I don't know if we have to change something in the warm up, whether it's the focus that we've got in training, you know, whatever it is, it's not getting these guys ready for the opening whistle. Like, it's just, it's weird. It really is weird. It's consistent. It's probably the thing we're most consistent at, and that's starting slowly. You know, so I don't know what Jonesy can change to alter that and to get the boys' heads in the game. But, you know, you hear it every week. Whenever one of our players gets interviewed by the Fox guys at full time, you know, it's always like, oh, we started slow. We had to play ourselves into the game, and that's disappointing. Well, yeah, it's disappointing. It's disappointing for us to see it every week as well. So, you know, what can we do?
Well, I guess that's a big question, and that's what Mark Jones is hopefully being paid to do.
Hopefully.
Because, look, it really... I think by this week, it actually took to about the 30-odd minute marks for the Jets to show any sort of... to really assert any dominance or put any pressure on the Western Sydney Wanderers, and that came about by some really sharp interplay and passing. There was a string of probably about 8 passes that I think happened down the left-hand side, involving, I think it was Cowburn, it was Maher, it was Klute, Yugarkovich was in there, I think, as well, and, no, Naboo, sorry, pardon me, it was Naboo, which resulted in a shot from, oh, no, actually, it didn't result in a chance. Do you remember the string of play that I was talking about?
Yeah, I think I do. There was, like, an overlapping run from Nick Cowburn. Yeah, I do remember the play you're talking about. I just remember, like, seeing Nick Cowburn, like, run around Malele and like overlap him, and I was like, oh yeah, this will work out all right. And then it didn't, so
yeah. Well, look, I mean, that was about the only highlight of the first half for the Jets. We really struggled to, I don't know, it was a really dull match, I think, from a Jets perspective. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think even almost from a neutral perspective, for big portions of the match, it was dull. There was a lot of the time in that game where not really either team was creating too much. Or, you know, Western Sydney would go forward and then they'd turn it over and then we'd be starting from scratch. Or, you know, they'd make a mistake or to go out for a goal kick or whatever and away we go again. But, you know, yeah, definitely from our perspective, it was, yeah, pretty lackluster. Like, you know, we really struggled to create anything in the final third. We struggled to win the midfield battle. I think, you know, probably the most intensity I saw from any player at any point was when Steven Ugarkovic picked up his yellow card.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was another case this week of the opposition scoring first against the Jets. It's becoming a regular thing. That's now 5 weeks on the bounce, and we've only scored the first goal three times from the 16 fixtures this year, and two of those times were in the first two rounds. So that's once in 13 matches we've scored.
Yeah,
well. Sorry, once in 14 matches, pardon me. My maths is great. That we scored the first goal. So we're having to chase games. We're consistently having to chase games to try and get something out of them. And we've been doing that to an extent, but it's got to be so hard that every week you might as well give a one-goal head start to the opposition before you can look to do anything with it, because we can't keep a clean sheet.
Yeah, definitely. For as hard as Jack Duncan tries, he can't seem to buy a trick at the moment. But I think it comes down again to those slow starts. Like there's been a few times where we've conceded in that opening half an hour, and it's just sort of put us really on the back foot. Like I remember the victory game, like we, you know, copped, what was it, two goals in the first 35 minutes, and then all of a sudden we were really on the back foot. And like, you know, that sort of stuff we've got to stamp out. Like, again, going back to what we were saying before, like if we can get these slow starts out of our system, then maybe that start will change. You know, maybe we will see us nab a quick goal, and all of a sudden the other team's chasing the game. And you know, but then again, hopefully the boys don't then get, you know, nosebleeds for you know, and just throw it away. Well, but
yeah, well, look, we've had actually happen to us this week what we've done to opposition teams the last 2 weeks, and that was have the wind taken out of our sails instead of taking it out of our opposition sails right before half time. I mean, the 2 weeks previous, Hull's injury time,
absolute stunner in Brisbane,
yeah. And Andrew Naboo, his injury time goal against Perth Glory to send us in 2-1 at half time as well. I mean, Lachlan Scott, it's a bit of a turnover. It's a tidy pass from Kieran Backus, and Nigel Bugard is just, I thought, pushed off way too easy, allowed far too much space, and Lachlan Scott scores his debut. Oh, I guess his first goal for the Wanderers and the first goal in the A-League.
Yeah, I mean, take nothing away from the kid though. Like, that's a tough finish when you've sort of got your back to goal and you take three steps and you've just got to hit it. But yeah, I mean, look, congratulations to him for his first A-League goal. Like, that's a massive achievement for him, and you know, wish him nothing but success if he's going to become really great and become, you know, the heir to the Tim Cahill throne. But you know, I guess that's, you know, me talking from a national perspective. But no, look, I agree with you. I think the defense really gave him way too much space. But you know, I think when I first saw the goal, I thought, oh shit, our defense has just really stepped off. We've stuffed up there. But when I saw the replay, like, it was a really tidy pass. It was a really neat finish. Like, I feel like that goal was just, the Wanderers just a class above in that finish. Like, it wasn't really too much we could do. Like, we'd been defending for most of the first half, and then all of a sudden they hit us with that. You know, what can you do?
Yeah, well, for me, it's not like it hadn't been coming. So
yeah, exactly.
Second half, we never really looked to threaten, I don't think. It was a really, again, it was worse than the first half, even from a neutral's perspective, and it was pretty difficult to watch. Did you find that, mate? Did you really struggle? I don't know, I did.
Yeah, I definitely struggled. I think I lost count of the amount of times I told my partner I was going to turn it off. So, you know, I think she was getting frustrated at it too. But yeah, look, it was really difficult to watch, and I do think we were a step below where we were in the first half. Maybe that goal did take the wind out of our sails, you know. But I think also the Wanderers just sort of thought, well, they haven't really threatened us all in the first half. You know, they're probably not going to do the same in the second half. So, you know, whatever it was really difficult to watch. And I wasn't really surprised when the second goal went in and we just sort of still didn't really look like we'd turned up.
I mean, we just allowed so much space down either side throughout the match. And it finally cost us dearly with Dimas managing on the second opportunity to pull it back to the centre of the box and Josh Sotirio to put it away. And I mean, sure, round three we played poorly and we managed to come back late at the death and salvage a 2-2 draw. But I don't know about you, but it that second goal from Sotirio, it just, for me, killed the game off. And despite round three's result, I don't think we ever look like getting back into it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I had about 3 or 4 people message me at the same time saying, you know, oh, that's the game done sort of thing, like when Sotirio scored. you were definitely one of them. But yeah, like I had my dad and a couple of friends that were just like, yeah, like that's it, game over. And I was like, yeah, we did not look like coming back. And at least in the game when we got that draw at Spotless, we actually pushed for like at least the last half an hour. Like there was a noticeable shift in the momentum of the game, and we pushed and pushed and pushed, and we were rewarded. Like we deserved the 2 goals that we got. But this game, we did not look like that. We looked like a totally different team. We weren't pushing forward. We weren't able to create anything in the final third. We weren't troubling Janjetovic at all. So, you know, I mean, we were never going to get anything out of that game. The minute the second goal went in, that was absolutely game over.
Well, that's Janjetovic's 9th clean sheet in 12 appearances against the Jets, which is just absolutely phenomenal.
I mean, you know, the last 8 of them would have been in a Sydney FC shirt, though, and we've got a pretty poor record against them, so...
That's true. <you know. laughs> That's true. Look, we'll jump now over into Mark Jones's press conference and see what he has to say, or had to say, about the match.
It was a solid effort. I mean, the first half, especially in that goal, half-time really hurt, I guess.
I heard a lot. I mean, I thought we controlled the first half. We were well and truly in the game. I think at times we didn't execute well enough. You know, we got into good areas plenty of times and then come back with the ball. I thought we needed to find a little bit of silk or a little bit extra. Someone had to do a little bit more. Very disappointed to come in 1-0 down and then come out second half, and they were obviously prepared just to sit numbers behind the ball and then try to pick us off on counter, and another sloppy moment off a set piece, and we concede the second, and then we're chasing the game.
How hard was it
without
those three attacking players?
Maybe there's that little bit of silk in the final third. I think we had 55% of possession or something away from home, and compare that to the first time we played them here, but the first time we played them away, and we had a 2-2 draw. We were well down on the possession stats. So enough of the ball, just didn't do enough with it. And then, the goal before halftime was very frustrating.
Yeah, come a long way since that game against.
Yeah, we have. But I mean, to lose 2-0 away after playing like that is very disappointing. I said, we did play well. We knocked it around, but I just think we didn't do any extra. We didn't do enough. We didn't do that little bit more. And individuals needed to do a little bit more. And had a little bit more belief at times, but yeah, are we playing good football? Yeah, you can't say we played bad. I can't go in and say they played bad. I just didn't think they did that little bit extra to win the game.
How do you not allow it to affect your mentality now? You know, stop the momentum going.
We've just been undefeated for 6 weeks. I mean, at some point, you're going to lose a game, and I think Muskie said the same thing. You know, they've lost a couple now, but Melbourne victory, I'm sure their belief doesn't change, and nor will ours. We are keeping possession of the ball better. We are playing out. We've just got to be a little bit tidier at times. And we take risks at times. They've taken a risk every now and then, not very many. But the couple that they took a risk, and we've got punished. But likewise, I just didn't think we did enough with the possession we had, and we should have got something better out of it. And you take 3 players out of your front 4, obviously affects the cohesion and the rhythm a little bit.
What was the thing? It might have been your first sub when you took Devante off Muller came on, Hoffman pushed wide. Did you think you got enough out of that, enough penetration?
We weren't getting enough penetration to start with, so then we thought we'd put Hoffman there and get a little bit more, but we didn't do much. just was more to get Lele in the central area. But yeah, I didn't think we were. We didn't have the impact that Hull had anyway in that area, so we needed to get beyond people. And yeah, I think Naboo was okay on the other side. I think he turned the ball over a few more times than normal. But yeah, I just think lacking three from that front four made a big difference. You're right.
Are they all going to be back next week?
They should be all back, yes.
Big boost then, isn't it?
It is a big boost. Three players, I said, we've played with five out, I guess, so three's not as bad, but it still makes a difference to any team. And like I said, we're trying to get that penetration and made a sub to try and get that, but it didn't impact the game too much more.
What can you tell us about Harry Sawyer who came on
the end? A young boy from Brisbane, big lad, put himself about. I thought he was very mobile. I thought when he came on, he was dangerous and gave us a target. And so one that I'm interested to give more game time.
And how long has he signed up for?
He's just to the youth contract at the end of the year, but we'll look at that if he continues to perform well.
All right, thank you very much. That's Mark Jones' thoughts on the match. Mate, let's talk about a couple of themes. There were quite a few themes that I took out of this match and questions that I think are worthwhile discussing. The first substitution is one that a lot of people talking. Daniel Mullins' introduction for Devante Clute. And as we heard Mark Jones speak about post-match, it was a decision that he made with the intent of getting Malele centrally, because that was something that had been working for us in the previous one and a half matches. I was looking for a formation change. I actually thought that Mullen was coming on so that we'd play three at the back. We'd look to push Cowburn and Hoffman further forward so that we could create a bit of an overload in the centre of midfield there. Malele also pushing in with Coco and making a midfield of Ugarkovic, Poljak, Malele, and then Coco in the centre as well, with Naboo getting in and around Coco, which I think is something he missed. Wasn't to be. Were you looking for a formation change initially, or was this what change would you have made at that if you're looking to change from 2-0 two goals down?
To be fair, the second he brought on Mullen, my first reaction was, hang on, what's he doing? But then when I saw Mullen go in at right back, I thought, okay, and like what he did is exactly what I thought was gonna happen when he came on, and I'm fairly sure I made that comment in our now little group chat. was that that's what he was doing, and sure enough, Malele went centrally and all that sort of stuff, and it didn't seem to work with the same effectiveness. I don't necessarily think that was Hoffman's fault. I just think the game was already gone. Like we weren't challenging the Wanderers' defence or Jan Jedovic, as we said, you know, regardless of who was up there. So it's probably not the change I would have made. Just trying to think of who was on the bench. Sawyer,
Halidi, and
Katrumbus and Mullen. Yeah, look, that's tough. You know, you don't really want to give young Harry Sawyer a baptism of fire with that long to go in the game. So, look, I think obviously without knowing Halidi's fitness, I would have ideally liked to have put him on. But yeah, look, you know what's done is done. I can see him trying to use the versatility of the more senior guys in the squad to try and, you know, to get Mullen on and all that. But you know, obviously just backfired for him. Didn't work.
I mean, I thought it was a bit hard on Devante Clute. I thought he was probably one of our better performances on the day. Or better performers, I should say, and you know that said, with the, I guess it was really hard to find any good performances within this match. They just weren't there for me. But I mean, you spoke about Harrison Sawyer, who came on for Coco with about 15 minutes to go. A lot of people, and me included, and other people on this pod have been looking for the opportunity for Coco to come in and actually have an opportunity to play, have an extended role within the team, and that came this week. Do you think it's a case here of Coco's missed his chance? Do you think he needs a run of extended game time to find some form? Or do you think it was that the team weren't really set up in the manner to best utilise Coco's game?
I think it's twofold. I think, yes, we weren't set up in a way that that helps his game. There were noticeable changes, and you could see him a few times trying to play the way he likes to play with that sort of hold-up play. I do remember a lot of times when the ball would be played to him and he would be trying to back into the defender to wait for more support. The problem is, though, is that a lot of those times he was too deep when receiving the ball. So then, you know, there's not really too much he can do except pass it back to the centre-backs or to Jugarkovic or Poliak. So we sort of struggled in that respect. But I think some tactical tweaks need to happen if we do play Coco up front on a more regular basis. But, you know, I guess that's what Mark Jones has paid the big bucks for. The other side of the problem, I think, is the fact that he's had such an interrupted start to his life in the A-League. Obviously, he wasn't exactly playing 90 minutes or anything in the first few weeks. He picked up a couple of injuries, then broke his jaw, was out for ages. I think it's been it hasn't been the greatest start for him to life in the league. Obviously, with foreigners coming to the A-League, they need time to settle into the type of football, particularly him coming from, you know, a league where they play on plastic pitches every week. You know, it's below freezing most of the time they play games. You know, to coming here in the middle of summer, playing on really, I mean, sometimes some atrocious pitches, but, you know, like it is a massive culture shift and a massive shift in the lifestyle, the type of football, all that sort of thing. And I think he hasn't really had the chance to really adapt to that. But at the same time, we as a club are running out of time for him to make that jump. You know, we need him to have that sort of change and to get us the results that we need, because he is an import player. You know, we need my personal thoughts on the imports are that if they're not adding value to your squad, what's the point in having them? And at the moment, I don't think he's adding enough value to the squad. You know, like I said, I think it's hampered by the fact that the problems I mentioned before.
I mean, whether we like it or not, at the moment he's here for 2 years. He has a 2-year contract that was signed under Scott Miller, and to me, he's looking like a player who needs... I think he's the sort of player that needs a couple of games to get into form, but I don't think that's a luxury the team has at this stage, because we are pushing for the finals. We have ambitions to make the finals, which we'll touch on soon. But I don't know. I just think he did miss his chance, but I think he needs someone closer in and around him to lay that ball off. And he was most... I think someone like Wayne Brown, when we saw him play with Coco up front against Adelaide United in round one, I had really high hopes for that partnership or something of that ilk to form.
As did I.
Anyway, it's an interesting to see whether Coco will be on the bench this week, because one player that seems to have really jumped ahead of the queue is Harry Sawyer, player number 148 for the Jets in the A-League. And an ex-Brisbane Roar youth player. I mean, we'll be certainly earning the ire of the Brisbane faithful, having taken Lachlan Jackson, Devante Clute, and now Harry Sawyer. Yet it remains to be seen what he's going to do. And I'm not so much interested in talking about the 15 minutes that he had, because, I mean, it was a very tough introduction for him. But on a broader scale within the squad, what does this mean for the likes of, say, Labby Haliti, Christian Brymora, who both are out of contract at the end of this year? And where does that leave the likes of, say, Cameron Joyce, who's also returned to the Jets youth lineup from the AIS last year?
I think it's pretty safe to assume, and as unfortunate as it may seem to some fans, I think it's pretty safe to assume that Labby's not getting renewed, in my opinion. I just don't think that he's had enough football to really justify getting another contract. And I know he's been held back with all these injuries and stuff like that, but if he's, you know, if we're not tracking him on for 15 minutes, you know, when we're 2-0 down, then either his fitness isn't up to scratch or the coach doesn't think it's worth it. So, you know, I don't think it leaves Labby in a good place, to be quite frank.
I mean,
as for the other guys, I mean, the young guys, like, they've still got time to develop. You know, you never know. Cameron Joyce might go and score 30 goals for the Jets youth next year, and all of a sudden Harry Sawyer's on his way out. So, you know, it is what it is. We've just got to, I guess, deal with the fact that we've got all these young players that at some point we need to make a decision who's going to be picked over the other one. And at the moment, I think that those young players should be taking the the sort of squad filling roles that what you know that Labby is currently taking.
Interesting. Yeah. Look, the Jets have been in a position where they've been able to consolidate. They've had a run of matches or a period of matches where if they are able to achieve results or get results from those matches, that they would be putting pressure on those teams above them or be able to consolidate their position within that top six. And they've failed to take that on a few occasions this year. I think the period where we started to lose, where we lost against Wellington, against City, and then the Mariners, and we had a draw with the Mariners, pardon me, that was a period that I look back on earlier in the year where we didn't take that chance. And we needed to beat the Wanderers to jump back into the top six. Wellington having a win, and Perth also... No, Wellington had a loss, didn't they? Late loss against Brisbane, while Perth winning late against Melbourne Victory. It's really tight around those positions, and we've gone from, I guess, a few weeks ago, Mark Jones talking about the top four, to now looking at... We're now sitting in eighth position. I mean, where's the mentality, drink, of the Jets looking to win games that they have? And, I mean, because they just haven't been able to do that. And, you know, has Mark Jones talked too early and talked about getting in the top four? This is what we're going to do. We're going to put pressure on. And, you know, is it still plausible for our team to make that top four?
Oh, look, I'm a bit of a realist, and I think we absolutely will not make the top four. If anything, I think we may be one of the two teams that are currently in the mix for the top six to not make the top six. So, but that said, you know, I think that there are some good signs from a squad building perspective. Like, we've got some good players that, you know, we need to keep a hold of for next season and the season after to, I guess, help us push up the table. But, you know, I think the must-win sort of attitude of the Wanderers game was exacerbated by the fact that Perth, you know, managed to get a win. Yeah. I think if Perth didn't get a win out of that game, it would have been entirely different. You know, I don't think we'd be looking at it with as much doom and gloom as we are. But, you know, I mean, things can change. You know, if in the next 3 weeks we have some good results and some other teams don't, then all of a sudden it changes again. Like, such is the nature of the A-League. Any team can beat anyone on any given day. So, I mean, except Sydney. No one can beat Sydney, apparently. So, yeah. You know, but like, we've got some pretty important games coming up. So if we can get some points and some good performances against the teams that we're coming up against soon, I'll be a bit more confident. But based on what I saw yesterday, and you know, it sort of felt like the Jets of old, and it really sort of dented my hopes of top six.
I mean, we've got a bit of a tough run coming up. I mean, it is classified as a home match, but the team are travelling this week to Coffs Harbour to take on Melbourne City, which the team will cover on the pod released Friday. We have then Perth Glory away, which, despite our win there earlier this year, it's traditionally been a graveyard for us. And then we have Melbourne Victory, who are in a bit of a form slump themselves at the moment. We've got them at home. And we are traditionally a bogey team for them, but not so much over the last couple of rounds. So, I mean, we're looking at it in the space of loss and thinking it's all doom and gloom. But yeah, you do bring up a good point that any team can win on their given day within the A-League, and that's just the nature of the competition. I mean, something that a lot of people, particularly on social media, have been calling for when his performances were not up to scratch or not up to the level that people expected. And we got to see this week how the team performed without Andrew Hoole in it. And I think it was interesting. I mean, it was interesting to take away from there. I mean, did we miss him? Yes or no?
Here's where I'm torn. I want to say no, but I think we did. I'm not too sure what he would have added to the game that I think we lacked tactically, but, you know, clearly, whenever he's in the team, over the last few weeks at least, you know, we've seemed to have been a lot better. Maybe it's his combinations with Naboo and Nordstrom. You know, whatever it is, it appeared to be working. So, you know, yeah. So, short answer, yes, I think we did miss him, and I think it'd be good to see him back in the game against City in Coffs Harbour.
I mean, he'll probably be good for the. He'll probably be feeling better for the week rest, but I certainly think we missed him. We missed that that ability to get in behind, or that bit of speed out wide. And I mean, like a martyr, say someone like Emre Ljubičić, who more in the way of his physical capabilities, where he could beat a player, but he doesn't have the same sort of speed that an Andrew Hull or an Andrew Nabu has. And we start to see the Jets fail to be able to put any pressure, and the opposition are able to push their line really high. So yeah, certainly for me, I think his absence was felt this week. We don't like to talk about it, but I think with you on the podcast, we're going to get an insight into what they were thinking. But there were certainly some puzzling decisions, some that were made and some that weren't, from the referee yesterday. How would you assess his performance, Anthony?
Poorly. Look, Matthew Conger, fairly sure I may need to be corrected on this, but I think he actually did two centres over the weekend. He, from memory, he did the Melbourne City Central Coast game. Yeah. So to make an odd decision in sending O'Donovan off to then, you know, 4 days later, make no decisions at all almost, was a bit of a change. But I think he, you know, the first 10 minutes I really sort of had high hopes that he was just going to let the game flow. You know, there was a few times where he was just sort of, there were little niggly, you know, a foot being left in too late that he just wasn't really paying attention to. And I thought, okay, well, he's just going to let the game flow. But then it got to a point where he was just really missing obvious stuff. And for both teams, like, you know, there were times when, you know, our boys would be chopping down Wanderers players and he'd just play on, or, you know, or vice versa. And there were even a couple of incidents where someone, you know, a player would foul another player. Play would go on, there would be an advantage situation sort of created, and then he would bring back the play back to the foul. And that's obviously really frustrating for, you know, the fan watching, but it's also frustrating for the players and the coaches. And so that obviously then, you know, breeds that sort of the dislike of the referee, and that sort of it brings up the tension in the game, and that then leads to him losing control of the game and that sort of stuff. And I think we started to see a bit of that, particularly around when Steven Ugarkovic got his yellow card. In the instance before where Stevie was fouled and a Wanderers player picked up a card, it was, I don't think he handled that well. And then for 30 seconds later, Stevie to steam in and chop the same guy, you know, to get a card, that sort of stuff, a good referee can stamp that out. A good referee with good man management skills can pull the players aside and stamp that out before it becomes an issue. He showed none of that. He showed none of, you know, he incorrectly applied the advantage. His foul recognition was off. You know, all these little things that should be basic things for referees at that level, I think he missed. And I think the most disappointing thing from my perspective was seeing that he had a FIFA badge on his chest.
Yep.
You know, surely he should be a much higher level. I mean, you know, they made the comment that it was his 12th A-League game before the start of the game. So I'm assuming that, given that he's a Kiwi, I'm assuming he's refereed top levels in New Zealand and throughout Oceania for a while to get a FIFA badge. But you'd sort of expect that a guy that has gone through that process to get a FIFA badge and is a FIFA-accredited referee should be able to handle a game like that. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't exactly a feisty game, but the decisions that he was and wasn't making changed the shape of the game into one that became feisty at times, and tackles flying in that shouldn't have been flying in if he managed the players to start with.
Look, this is the third season that he's been a referee in the A-League, and it's difficult to say that he's been a regular fixture during those years. He refereed 5 games in 2014-15. He refereed 4 matches during last season, 15-16. And so far this year, he's been used sparingly. That was only his 3rd game this year. He's refereed the Jets on 3 occasions. One of them was a 1-0 loss to Sydney FC. The other was our My favourite Indian night, where I got drunk and we were 4-0 down at half time against Adelaide United, the 7-0 thrashing. And then there was the Wanderers match. So the Jets have never scored when he's been the referee. So we've lost all 3 matches. Look, he is a New Zealand referee as well. So it's not like he is consistent. I mean, I'd classify him as an inexperienced referee. And it's something that we've touched on previously, where the Jets are seeming to attract the inexperienced referees for their matches. Look, Is there an? I wonder. Is there an FFA conspiracy here where we're looking to get the big teams in and the inexperienced referees are ruling against the little guys? Ooh, don't know.
Yeah, I was very, very vocal in an earlier pod a few months ago about FFA breeding contempt towards smaller clubs, and I made the comment that it was, you know, between us, the Mariners, and the Phoenix, you know, we're consistently getting stuffed by, you know, we're getting appointments, like referees appointed to us that were not experienced A-League officials. Since I made that rant, I believe it was like the three of the four games after I made that rant, we had Sean Evans, Peter Green, and Jared Gillette. So, you know, like very experienced A-League referees. So, you know, I'll take full credit for that. But no, long story short, I don't necessarily think it's an FFA bias conspiracy or whatever. Not intentionally anyway. As someone who, I guess, appoints referees for a living, you do, you know, sometimes you can have that sort of, that thought in the back of your head where you go, oh, well, you know, it's that game may not be as important as this other game, so I'm going to put the better referee on the important game. And obviously with the Jets in our table position, you know, there will be a lot of times, I imagine, when, you know, we get that sort of unconscious stick from FFA where it's like, oh, well, that game won't be as important because it's only the Jets, or, you know, for other clubs, it's only the Mariners, it's only the Phoenix. And hence why I think we still consistently get poor officials, well, not poor officials, but we get lesser experienced officials than the other games. But that said, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're getting better officials. You know, some of the more experienced guys have been making a whole load of stuff ups. Sean Evans, I think, has made at least one stuff up a week this season. You know, Peter Green had a pretty average game the other night. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, as a minimum, there's been a few games where he's had two or three, and he even stuffed up as a fourth official in the FFA Cup semi-final. So I don't know how you manage that.
He's probably bricking it.
But, you know, yeah. See what you did there, mate. Le Grill, what the hell is that?
Focus.
But yeah, like, even like Peter Green didn't have a fantastic game the other night. Jared Gillette seems to have, you know, gone AWOL for the last few weeks. So yeah, I don't really know what there is to do. And even the last time we had Chris Beath, I think he made a stuff up. So, yeah. You know, I don't really know what you do, to be honest. But yeah, we do seem to be getting shafted with guys that have 20 games or less experience quite frequently.
And look, we'll finish this conversation just by saying it is a very difficult position. It's one that's very easy for people, or the fans, to critique and say where they are getting it wrong. But yeah, we will say that it is a very difficult position for these guys to be in. So, 5-day turnaround for the Jets, but the team will certainly talk about that in the Melbourne City preview pod. So, and it is an... While it is a home match, as I mentioned before, I would almost consider it as an away match. But certainly going to be tough for us to back up and get a result against Melbourne City. Mate, who's your man of the match?
Oh, goodness. I think, look, we didn't really have too many men that turned up for the match. But for me, I'm going to go with my boy Devante.
Yep, I'm going to say Jack Duncan. I think that... he made a couple of good saves in the second half that allowed us to save a bit of face. And a special shout-out to the pizza guy as well. He delivered earlier than expected, and he was bang on with the order as well. So, happy days. Mate, we'll just touch quickly on some news from the W League. The Jets, we mentioned last week that the Jets really had it all to do, and they faced the ladder-topping Sydney FC. In Sydney, with their season on the line, and the return of Aaron Gilliland has been instrumental to their turnaround in form. She netted a hat trick as the Jets went on and beat Sydney 3-1.
Yeah, that's a massive result for the girls. Like, massive congratulations for them to go down there and pull off that result against the top of the table side. And yeah, I did notice that Aaron scored a hat trick, so good on her. Like, that's incredible to come back and then all of a sudden go, oh, well, yep, you know, it's just going to put three past you. Thanks very much, you know. So here's hoping they can keep it up.
You look with her and the loss of Caprice Tedesco, we thought at that stage was going to be crucial to our season, but she's been such a find.
Yeah, she absolutely has been. She's been incredible. Even the, you know, I'll admit I haven't been able to get to too many W League games, you know, not living in Newcastle. But the few that I've seen, like Aaron's been one of the standout players that we've got. So she's an incredible find, and I'd really love to see her playing for Newcastle next year and for however long she wants to keep coming back to Australia for.
Yeah, well, I hope she continues to wear the Jets as well, the colours of the Jets. That leaves the girls with essentially their destiny in their own hands, and a similar situation to that they faced last year, where they needed a win against Brisbane Roar to be able to make the top four and eventually the playoffs. But this year, it's if they can win against Melbourne City, who sit above them in fourth, and they can get a win, they'll be in the finals. Pretty simple.
Yeah, looks pretty good. I hope they can get it. I'll be in Coffs Harbour, so I'll see if I can get to the game early. I will be very loudly supporting the girls if I manage to get there on time.
Very nice. All right, and the youth. We'll finish off with the youth. They missed out on the in their conference. They ended up coming fourth of the five places. They ended their season with a 2-1 loss to the Centre of Excellence, and the grand final position from our conference goes to Sydney FC. So I think they're facing Melbourne Victory next week.
Melbourne City. Yeah, it's this weekend before the Mariners Glory game.
Right, very good. Disappointing, certainly, for Clayton Zane and his boys there. As for transfer news, mate, the Herald's been reporting that there are very few to no likely signings. I mean, we've signed all right from the NPL, and it appears as though we've got Harry Sawyer on, brought him up through the youth for some sort of contract. Do you think it is a bluff, or do you think that the club are genuine in what they're saying here?
I think the club are quite genuine in what they're saying. There's obviously a lot of rules and stuff that they've got to abide by when it comes to the contracts and transfers and things like that. And as someone, I know a little bit about the rules, and so I can understand where the club are coming from in not having really enough space to bring in someone that's going to better the squad. You know, Laurie keeps making the point about how, you know, someone that we bring in needs to be better than what we've got. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yep.
And I totally agree, particularly when we're not looking to consolidate a position. We're looking to push higher up the table. So why do we need squaddies? You know, we need someone that's going to come in and make an impact. And if we don't have the money in the cap, or if there's someone that's not available to bring in that's going to play in that position that we need, then what's the point? So, you know, I think the club's being totally genuine there. I think Laurie's been very genuine in everything he said in his time at the club. So it's a positive change from what's previously been going on in the Hunter. But I also take a little bit of, a little bit of positivity out of the interview that the Herald released with Jonesy the other day, saying that we've potentially signed a couple of players for next season that other A-League clubs were looking at, or they're from other A-League clubs or things, something like that. So, that will be interesting to see who they are, and I'm actually looking forward to finding out who they are.
I agree. All right, well, that, I guess, wraps up another episode of the Jetstream. Anthony, thank you very much. You and I have managed to carry the fort, hold the fort this week, and keep things ticking over. If people want to get in touch with us, they can find all the information in the show notes. And you can find our Twitter handles down there as well. You can find us through iTunes. You can also find us through Stitcher and through any other Android apps as well. All right, mate. Very good. Thanks for joining us. I can hear our little bub screaming upstairs, so I think that I might call it a night there and go up and help the wife out.
I think that's your cue, mate.
All right, mate. All right, chat to you soon. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week, and look forward to hearing the preview of the Melbourne City match later in the week. All good. And that's how it's done, mate.
Beauty. I think we held the fort down quite well. I think we did all right.
I don't think we need the others. We could just do this every week and just talk.
Yeah, I don't know if my girlfriend will like that, mate.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm sure. I'm sure the missus.
Yeah,
I'm sure your missus would. Yeah. Well, I'm down, Benjamin.